Good morning. Welcome to Back to Business with Rob and Alan. I'm Rob Davidson, owner of Davidson Advertising.
And hello, my name is Alan McCloskey. My wife and I have run our own local chain of shoe stores, Alan's Shoes, in Tucson since 1982.
And this is Saturday, July 4th, 2020. July 4th. Happy Independence Day, everyone. It's interesting Independence Day this year, Alan.
Sure is.
Things are definitely a lot of news this week.
The sponsors of Back to Business are Tucson Window and Door, Al Coronado Plumbing, Steamy Concepts, WaterTech, Arizona Pest Control, and Alan Shoes.
As host of the show, Alan and I are committed to serving you with ideas, strategy, and techniques for building marketing, improving your business, and helping you out. We created the show to try and help the efforts of small business owners to recover from the corona impact. Through all of our shows, we've been discussing the latest news, and we also interview leaders in our community that have shared with you their experience, their knowledge, and some have shared their stories of struggles and success.
Our big topic of the week, which we will discuss in segment 4 of our show, is the difference between delegate and abdicate.
I've been guilty of that myself, Alan. It's a lot easier sometimes, isn't it?
Well, the topic is pretty important, especially during the COVID crisis.
It is. Interesting story that I just saw this morning from the Arizona Republic, Alan, that might be of interest to our listeners. The Lifetime Fitness chain will reverse course and shut down the indoor fitness portion of its Arizona locations effective immediately. But Mountainside Fitness, which confirmed yesterday that some employees have tested positive for COVID-19, remains open. The two chains were among several fitness chains in Phoenix area that announced they wouldn't follow Governor Doug Ducey's Monday order to close gyms until at least July 27th in an effort to stem the spread of COVID-19. Both gyms remained open through Friday morning. Now, Lifetime plans to shut down the fitness floors, studios, and gyms at their Arizona locations through Monday evening, the statement said, adding that all other services and amenities at their clubs, including the salon, spa, food service, and pools, will remain open. The decision to close the indoor fitness areas and Lifetime clubs comes one day after Arizona suspended a third liquor license associated with a Lifetime Fitness location. Lifetime officials met with the governor's office and the director of the Arizona Department of Health Services yesterday morning, and out of respect for the governor, decided to close the gym soon after, according to the statement from Lifetime. The Arizona Department of Health Services also announced they are partnering with Lifetime to develop examples of best practices. Lifetime Fitness complying with the governor's executive order is in the best interest of all Arizonans, said Dr. Kara Crist, director of the state health department. We appreciate their willingness to protect Arizonans and provide their time and subject matter expertise. Minneapolis-based Lifetime spokeswoman Natalie Bushaw said the time will allow the officials to meet with the governor's team to identify solutions to reopen the indoor fitness portion of their clubs as soon as possible. The government should work with each industry to unveil the safest protocols to conduct business, Bushaw said, listing capacity limitations, mask requirements, and temperature checks as possible safety measures. Businesses who do not comply with these agreed-upon, robust safety and cleaning protocols should be shut down immediately and assertively. Bushaw again defended the health and safety of Lifetime Fitness clubs, saying the health clubs and gyms are able to operate more safely than other businesses. Lifetime safety protocols are beyond that of any other business, a statement said. Once the health department has the opportunity to review what we've been experiencing every day, we believe they will come to the same conclusion. They also said Lifetime members should contact Governor Ducey via Twitter, email, or phone and ask him to keep your clubs fully open and to keep your devoted team members. Mountainside Fitness, meanwhile, is not changing course. Mountainside Fitness CEO Tom Hatton said Friday their gyms will stay open through at least Monday morning when an emergency hearing on Hatton's legal complaint against Ducey's executive order is scheduled in Maricopa County Superior Court. Hatton said Mountainside Fitness locations will close Monday if the court does not rule in his favor. He confirmed some employees have tested positive for the virus, but did not provide details about how many or at which locations. Members at the facilities with COVID-19 positive employees have not been notified yet. The Arizona Department of Health Services says it will move forward with efforts to enforce the governor's order against Mountainside Fitness to protect the health and welfare against the serious threat posed by COVID-19. So kind of interesting that some of these business owners are pushing back against the governor's order, Alan.
You know, it's interesting, and I can see their point that maybe they're being singled out when there might be other easy-to-see businesses that were customers congregate a little bit more closely or just as closely. But a governor has a responsibility and has some decision-making power, of course, to try to help the, you know, they serve the public, the governor, and the governor has to make some decisions here. But there's no doubt that we're in a big problematic phase for our COVID crisis here. I mean, I think it's been almost 5,000 cases was our top daily case count this week. It went from 3,300 to 4,900 and dropped back down to 3,300. That's a lot of cases each and every day. And the governor's in a hard position, but the state's in a hard position. Someone needs to take action here, Rob.
Well, and you know, the other thing, Alan, these businesses are in a tough position. You look at like Mountainside Fitness with 20 locations up in the Phoenix area. You can imagine what the rents cost every month for 20 locations, the utilities, all those things continue even if you're closed. So, you know, the guy's trying to fight for his business. So you can see both sides of the coin. It's a very tough situation.
Listen, I run some locations that some are the size of gyms, and I know the rent's not cheap. And there's still ongoing costs in addition to rent.
Right, no matter
even,
what.
Even if your landlord gave you a deal, you've got some ongoing insurance costs, you've got ongoing utilities, you can't just shut those on and off like a light switch, and you've got other services that are provided to your business that you need to provide for, so it can easily be for this guy $2 million? I mean, was the figure we were figuring it out?
Oh, yeah, $10,000 a month per location in rent, that's just $200,000 alone. Forgetting insurance and utilities and all the other things that go on top of it.
A lot of money in a short period of time, and you can easily be run out of business. And I don't blame him for arguing the point. I'm not sure that I wouldn't have closed and tried to fight the the court case at the same time. It's very difficult, and I am.
Yeah, it's a tough situation.
I have some concern for him, but I also have some concerns for our fellow citizens here. And we need to do something here to stem the tide of this COVID crisis, because it is affecting not just the people that got sick, but anyone they may run into. I mean, our elderly and our people with serious diseases. That's a problem, and you don't know that a delivery person may not give it to you inadvertently, and we need to protect our society, especially the people that are most vulnerable.
Oh, absolutely, and that kind of morphs into our next little story here. Can businesses require you to wear a mask when you come in? Businesses can require consumers to wear shoes, shirts, pants, and shirts. What about masks? Conflicts at businesses and viral videos of shoppers' tirades have erupted in recent weeks as coronavirus cases surge in 40 states and in at least 21 states pause reopening plans. During the COVID-19 pandemic, states have varied on mandates, and some cities and counties issue their own requirements. Last week, a woman without a mask at a California Trader Joe's called employees and shoppers Democratic pigs and screamed profanities because she said she felt threatened when a fellow customer cursed her out for not wearing a mask. In Fort Worth, Texas, a woman was recorded spitting on a 7-Eleven counter Monday after the cashier refused to ring up her purchase because she was not wearing a mask. Frontline workers, including grocery store employees who fought for measures such as masks at the onset of the pandemic, are having to fight for measures again, said Susan Hernandez, a longtime employee at a California Food for Less and FCW 770 member. We urge shoppers to think of themselves, think of their families, and think of us when they're at the store. Please wear a mask, Hernandez said, noting when a customer gets aggressive, we try to de-escalate the situation. To protect workers, some retailers won't confront shoppers who enter without a mask. Walgreens encourages customers to wear face coverings, but out of concern for employee safety, advises against confronting customers about the policy or trying to keep them from entering stores. The drugstore chain said that COVID-19 questions are very, very, there's a lot of questions in their stores. If you're planning to shop, know the answers before you go to the store.
Before we talk about our guests today, I want to remind our listeners they are listening to Back to Business with Robin Allen on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. Our website is b2btucson.com, b2btucson.com. If you want to call our show, it's 790-2040. That's 790-2040. Catch us on the internet, as I've said. And if you want to sponsor our show, call Rob at Davidson Advertising, 629-9555. Please come back after our commercial break.
For over 37 years, Allen's Shoes has become the place to find quality comfort footwear, great customer service, and the best selection of sizes and widths. Allen's Shoes carries men's and women's shoes from brands such as New Balance, Brooks, Hoka, Birkenstock, Clarks, Echo, Taos, Finn, Mephisto, Piccolinos, Walky, Propre, and many others. We think we're the best place to buy shoes in Tucson. Our selection of wide widths is the best in the area. A big selection of the best brands, coupled with service from an energetic staff and a vast inventory of sizes and widths, is the Allen Shoes promise. Our new store hours are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Allen Shoes offers the comfort you want and the service you deserve. Visit us at one of our Tucson stores or online at allenshoes.com.
So much more than just windows and doors. Tucson Window and Door.
You've seen the rest. Now see the best at Tucson Window and Door. Right now, you'll save during our biggest sale ever. Save 15% on your entire purchase, plus an additional $100 on every window and door. Tucson Window and Door is locally owned and operated. You'll never get over the top prices by aggressive salespeople who won't leave your home. We'll always treat you fairly and with respect. Check out our numerous testimonials and positive reviews. For the best products at the best prices, specially engineered for Tucson's harsh elements, remember Tucson Window and Door. Financing options are available OAC. Remember, save 15% plus an additional $100 on every window and door during our biggest sale ever at Tucson Window and Door. Go to TucsonWindowAndDoor.com to schedule your free estimate today. That's TucsonWindowAndDoor.com or call 298-DOOR, 298-DOOR, ROC number 206959.
So much more than just windows and doors, Tucson Window and Door.
Need a plumber? Call Al Coronado Plumbing. Featuring our 5-crown service. We charge by the job, not the hour. There are never any unpleasant surprises. As everyone knows, emergencies happen at the worst time. That's why we answer our phones 24/7. And at Al Coronado Plumbing, there's never an overtime charge. You pay the same regardless of when we do the work.
Al Coronado Plumbing, the name you come to trust. Our 5-pound service keeps things running.
Our work is guaranteed up to 5 years. Call 323-7848.
Al Coronado Plumbing. Our 5-pound service keeps things running.
Call 323-7848. ROC number 289733.
Welcome to Back to Business with Rob and Allen. I'm Rob Davidson, owner of Davidson Advertising.
And I'm Allen McCloskey, owner of Allen Shoes, and this is Back to Business with Rob and Allen.
Our special guest today is Dave Barber. Dave is a partner with the CPA firm of Regier, Carr, and Monroe. He has many years of experience serving the needs of a wide variety of audit and tax clients, a partner active in all aspects of their services. He currently serves a number of commercial clients in the manufacturing, healthcare, construction, and nonprofit industries. He also provides income tax services to individuals and small businesses. As a certified fraud examiner, Dave is able to assist clients in strengthening their internal controls in order to prevent fraud, and he provides consulting and litigation support in fraud-related matters. A graduate of the University of Illinois, Dave is a member of the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, Arizona Society of Certified Public Accountants, Association of Certified Fraud Examiners, and the Healthcare Financial Managers Association. Dave is active in the Tucson Sunrise Rotary Club, Caballeros del Sol, and Catalina Council of Boy Scouts. Dave, welcome to Back to Business.
Hi, Rob. How are you doing? How are you guys doing today?
We're doing great. Thank you. Appreciate your being with us today, Dave. A lot of things to talk about. I know Alan's got several questions for you in the accounting realm with all that's going on, so I'm going to turn it over to him.
Okay.
Dave, I got the PPP loan, the CARES Act loan, and I've got a lot of questions here for you. Are you involved with some of your clients regarding how to treat some of that accounting stuff with the PPP loan?
Yeah, we've worked with a lot of our clients on PPP loans. Probably the vast majority of our business clients did get PPP loans, and believe me, it's been a moving target from back in April when the program first got issued, and as I'm sure you've seen and know, there's been tons and tons of revisions to the program and to the requirements ever since then.
Well, I am thoroughly confused at the current point, and so I've been spending some time because I'm at week eight after getting my loan, and so I'm sitting here trying to understand the rules, and it's hard to differentiate between what you've heard, what you think you know, and what you currently are interpreting when you're reading the rules. And I'm not even sure the rules are all that clear when it comes to accrual versus cash accounting.
Well, they're not. That's true. And you hit the nail right on the head. There's a lot of good information out of there. There's some decent information out of there, and there's a lot of speculation as well. The cash versus accrual issue. Primarily we're telling clients to consider that on a cash basis. Unrelated to that, I keep preaching patience for everybody who's wanting to get loan forgiveness and submit their applications. I've had a lot of clients that are really eager to go through that process, but everything we hear is that there's going to continue to be revisions to the program during the month of June. They issued seven separate revisions to the rule that created the PPP loan. And they continue to issue, U.S. Treasury continues to issue new frequently asked questions. The last ones on those came out on June 25th, I believe. And from what we understand, that process is not done and is going to continue on for the next 30 to 60 days.
Okay, so we understand that there are some revisions. We understand there might be further revisions. As it stands right now, I'm going to ask you some specific questions, Dave, and listen, we'll forgive you if the answer isn't altogether perfect right now because we know that there might be revisions. But as I understand it, when you're dealing with payroll, if you got your funds in the middle of a payroll period, you have two alternatives. You can either accrue that based on how many days or the day you got the loan. So forgive any days in your payroll period before you got the loan and don't count those. Or you can just jump to your next payroll period, even if it was a week or two after, well, it wouldn't be 2 weeks, but a week or so after you got your loan. Is that correct?
That is correct. As a matter of fact, when the program first started, we thought that it had to start under the first scenario you just described, that payroll going forward from the date you got your loan had to be recognized, and then subsequently that was clarified that said, no, if you paid that payroll a week later, and you, again, back to your cash basis question, that was acceptable, even though part of that pay period fell before the date you received the loan funds.
So let's assume that you got your loan, let's just say May 7th, and that was the middle of the pay period, and you decided, well, until the beginning of the next pay period, it might be, let's say, the 18th of the month or whatever it might be, you decided that you're going to use that next payroll period, so therefore that's when your 8 weeks would start. Does that mean your expenses for rent also have to start on that later period, or you can actually use that on a different calendar basis?
Well, I think the issue with as it relates to rent is, conservatism is certainly key in all this and common sense. So again, if you're if you look at it on a cash basis and you got an 8 week period, which is we haven't even got into the fact that's now been extended to 24 if you want to go that route, then the you're going to have 2 months of rent in that 8 week period in all likelihood. And so if you pay the 2 months of rent in that period, then that's really what you ought to use. You really can't try to dump 3 months into that, et cetera.
Okay. So let's stay on the rent for a minute, Dave, here, if you don't mind, because let me ask you the following example. The law, if as I understand it, is you could pay some back rent, but paying future rent is not allowed. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, that's my understanding. I don't know anything official on that, but I certainly wouldn't advise anybody to try to do that.
Okay, so let's say that you decide your 8 week period ends in the middle of the month, let's say July 15th. But you paid your rent on July 1st. Can you include all your rent that you paid on July 1st because that's when it's due, or only half of that month?
You'd get to include, under that scenario, if you paid rent on June 1st and July 1st, you'd be entitled to take to include both those amounts.
Okay. So, again, it's cash, not necessarily accrual. Because originally, the original rules, correct me if I'm wrong, stated that it both had to incur the expense as well as pay the expense within the 8 weeks. Wasn't that the original understanding of the law?
Yeah, I think it was. It was, again, so many of those things that they initially came out with just didn't make sense. But in their defense, they threw this together really, really quickly. So that's why we keep seeing these revisions and clarifications.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. You can use up to 60%. You need to use at least 60% in order to make this work on payroll.
Right.
Has that changed at all?
Well, originally it was 75%, but they reduced it to 60%. But now you must have at least 60% payroll.
And what happens if you don't?
So my understanding of that, if you don't hit 60% for payroll, then none of it can be forgiven.
That's my understanding. That's why I'm being very careful. And trust me, I've got multiple spreadsheets, and I'm sitting here like stressing out, make sure I do it all right.
Yeah.
And on the other portion that you use, it can only be used, correct me if I'm wrong again, on rent, utilities, and mortgage interest.
Right. And there's been some differentiation about what they consider to be mortgage interest. It's clear if it's building mortgage interest, that's clearly defined. There's also been, and I'm not sure exactly where it stands today, if you've got equipment loans and those loans are secured by the equipment, there's also been talk that the interest related to those also qualify.
Well, that's interesting. I'm going to write that down for myself.
What about lines of credit and that sort of thing that people have open?
And that's also been a subject of conjecture because, again, if the line of credit is secured by real estate or equipment, originally we thought that was going to qualify as interest under this program. Recently I saw something that seemed to indicate that was not the case.
Correct me if I'm wrong. If you own your real estate under a separate LLC, you can't use that interest in this particular equation. Only if your company owns the real estate is paying that mortgage directly. Is that correct?
That is correct. The corollary to that is that if you're paying rent from your operating company to the entity that owns the building, the rent is deductible, even if it's paid to a related party.
Okay, that we agree with. So we're pretty much in the same place. It's still, you'll agree, it's still difficult to calculate this all out.
It is, and I keep preaching patience to my clients because everybody really wants to get this forgiveness done and get it over with. Chase Bank sent an email out to their customers the other day that had gotten the money and said, we're not even going to take applications until September for forgiveness. And with the continuing changing of the landscape of this, I think it's probably just going to get easier as time goes on and more rules are issued.
Well, currently, correct me if I'm also wrong, is it 8 weeks or 24, but not necessarily in between?
The most recent thing I understand on that is it can be in between. Originally, when the rule came out and said they went to 24, it was a either or. And then I was on a webinar the other day, and I don't have a specific reference for this, but they had indicated on that now you could cut that off at any point in between 8 and 24 when you thought you'd achieved full loan forgiveness.
And, Dave, the repayment of the loan doesn't come for, what, 2 years?
The repayment of the loan, it's a two-year, this is tricky, too. So if you got your loan before June 5th, it's a two-year maturity that starts at 12/31 of 20, I believe. And then if you got the loan after June 5th, it's a five-year maturity for repayment, and it's only got a 1% interest attached to it as well.
Either way.
Yeah.
Dave, we're going to ask you to stay with us through the break, if you don't mind. We've got a lot more questions, and we want to ask you what your practice is doing regarding your internal office practices, and we want to ask you some other interesting questions. So please stay with us.
Okay, we'll do.
Catch us on the internet at b2btucson.com. That's b2btucson.com. If you want to sponsor our show, please call Rob at Davidson Advertising, 629-9555. You're listening to Back to Business with Rob and Alan on KVOI 1030 AM. The Voice. Will be back right after our commercial break.
Wide Wide by Allen Shoes is a wide-width specialty store located at 7366 North Oracle Road, about a block north of Ina. Wide Wide by Allen Shoes focuses on wide and extra-wide widths of men's and women's shoes, the best selection of wide-width shoes in Tucson. You'll find some brands in this location that aren't carried at our stores, such as Softwalk, Aravon, SAS, Trotters, and Easy Spirit. We also carry the best selection of wide widths from both Brooks and New Balance. A big selection of the best brands, coupled with service from an energetic staff, and a vast inventory of sizes and widths is the Allen Shoes promise. Wide Wide by Allen Shoes is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Allen Shoes offers the comfort you want and the service you deserve. Visit us at one of our Tucson stores or online at allenshoes.com.
ROC 291-200.
Water damage. It happens. If it hasn't happened to you, it will.
Steamy concepts. Steamy concepts.
Toilets overflow, pipes leak, and roofs fail, all causing water damage.
Steamy concepts. Steamy concepts.
And mold? It thrives in the hidden water damage crevices of your home.
Steamy concepts. Steamy concepts.
So who do you call? You guessed it, Steamy Concepts. And that's who plumbers, insurance agents, and realtors call, because they know that Steamy Concepts will take great care of their customers. Steamy Concepts has been voted Best Mold Restoration Contractor by the Arizona Daily Star's Reader's Choice Awards 4 years running. Steamy Concepts accepts all homeowners insurance, and we have easy payment options.
If you ever have a water or mold damage problem in your home, make sure you only call the local trusted mold pros at Steamy Concepts for a free no-obligation assessment.
Check us out online at steamyconcepts.com.
Don't get steam, call Steamy instead at 574-9200.
Water is the essence of life. Doesn't your family deserve the best? Give your family the best with the drinking water system from WaterTech. Our systems will provide you and your family with clean, healthy water, up to 25 gallons per day. A soft water system from WaterTech will help protect your plumbing, fixtures, will eliminate hard water minerals, and make your dishes and glasses sparkle. Give your family the gift of water from WaterTech.
WaterTech.
Providing service after the sale.
Since 1967.
Got bugs, termites, bees, or rodents? Arizona Pest Control will hunt them down. Arizona Pest Control is your complete desert pest management specialist. Pests can't run or hide from Arizona Pest Control. They use only the latest and most technologically advanced methods of pest elimination available, which minimizes the effects on the environment. Let Arizona Pest Control get rid of your bad bugs, termites, bees, or rodents. Serving Tucson and Southern Arizona since 1947. Go to azpest.com to schedule your free evaluation today.
Welcome back to Back to Business with Rob and Alan. I'm Rob Davidson, owner of Davidson Advertising. The sponsors of Back to Business are Tucson Window and Door, Al Coronado Plumbing, Steamy Concepts, WaterTech, Arizona Pest Control, and Allen Shoes.
And I'm Alan McCloskey. My wife and I own and operate Allen Shoes in Tucson. Our guest today is Dave Barber, and Dave has been very gracious with us and been answering a lot of questions relative to the PPP. We're going to ask him just a few more, and then we're going to ask him some questions on another topic. Dave, you still with us?
Hello?
Hi, Dave. Are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, the music was still playing, so I couldn't hear you. So.
Not a problem. So, listen, I'm going to ask you a few more questions because I think it's very important for some of our listeners on the PPP. So, from what I understand, Steve Mnuchin came out and said that when you do your income taxes at the end of the year, you should not include those expenses that are covered by the forgiveness in your expenses. For me, it makes sense to just do the reverse. Count those expenses, but count the forgiveness as income. What do you think is the current standard?
I think you're exactly right that the forgiveness piece will be picked up as miscellaneous income and just report your expenses as they were incurred, and I think there's multiple good reasons for that. If you eliminate those expenses, it affects your comparability. There could be other that data could be used and your tax return could be used for other purposes. There could be other tax credits available, et cetera, that might be impacted by that. So, yeah, what we're telling clients is to record the forgiveness as miscellaneous income. And of course, that also is an ongoing open item as well, that there's speculation that they'll ultimately make the loan forgiveness non-taxable. So stay tuned for that, too.
Well, if that happens, then you wouldn't be able to take your expenses?
No, right now you're not able to take those expenses.
Okay.
But they may change that ultimately to allow for those to all still be deductible.
Now, one thing that you can't use the PPP money for is your FICA and Medicare match. Is that true?
Is correct. Yeah, that's correct. You can use it for state unemployment taxes.
Okay, so that makes sense. Okay, so we're going to move on a little bit here. We're going to ask you, Dave, at the office, are there been any increased business or increased concern, or what's going on in your world relative to the COVID crisis?
Well, it's certainly been an interesting year and an interesting tax season. When they originally extended the due date to July 15th, we thought, well, this will take a lot of pressure off. And then the PPP program came up, and along as with some of the related payroll tax programs, and so that created a lot of additional work for us. And a lot of it is just people having questions, just like you, Alan, that are trying to weave their way through this. And we've been working with clients both through the initial application process and trying to work with them as well through the record-keeping process now to so they can maximize forgiveness on the back end. So we've been, in terms of our clients, we've been fortunate so far. We've had a few clients positively impacted by all of this. We've had some negative impacted and some not really impacted so far. There's a lot of businesses out there, I think, that are going to feel this 6 months down the road as they're impacted by their customers that are in the hospitality or restaurant industries and some of the ones that are hardest hit.
Well, I guess you're saying that if you're a restaurant owner and you're impacted, that means all your suppliers are impacted and the people that they employ.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yep.
So produce companies we rely on to deliver goods, they have employees and trucks and expenses or whatever, and they're impacted. And that could be said for, it happens in our shoe business. A lot of my suppliers are just not doing the business that they would normally do, and their inventory is getting old and filling up their warehouses, and they can't fit in their fall inventory that really starts to arrive right now. And that is happening in my world too. So what does someone do if they don't have a relationship with the CPA? They really have a relatively small business, and they usually are pretty comfortable with filing their Schedule C, for example. And I mean, what are they doing, or what kind of resources are available for them?
Well, obviously, they can reach out to try to find a CPA or a bookkeeping practice, and there's a lot of good small bookkeeping practices that can really help small businesses at a pretty affordable rate too. In addition to that, I'm not sure if SBA or SCORE even has anything. You know, SCORE, which is the business support organization. I don't know if they've got any resources related to these PPP loans, but that might be a potential avenue. Tucson Chamber might be an avenue to get some resources or some direction anyway.
You know, I was also thinking that there are temporary services of employment services especially in Tucson. There's account temps, for example, and they've got some people that love to work part-time or temporary assignments that might be able to help a small business.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. That's correct, too.
Dave, how does this late filing of July 15th affect, like, estimated payments and all that for the year?
Again, also been a bit of a moving target. July 15th, as it relates to IRS, if you, on your personal taxes, your tax return will be due, so you'll have to pay whatever taxes remain for 2019 that you haven't paid. And your estimates for the first two quarters of 2020 will also be due on July 15th.
So, that sounds like fun.
Yeah. So
triple whammy.
We've had a few people be surprised because they're going to have to do big checks to cover all three of those at this point. But the flip side is they didn't have to do a check in April and they didn't have to do a check in June, but they do now.
Can they still file extensions?
Yeah, you can still extend until October 15th, and of course that just extends the time for filing and not the time for payment. So,
just gives you a little breathing room.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, just to let you know, as coincidental as it might be, right after this show, I've got a little bit of a break, and then I'm dropping my paperwork off to my CPA, and we only expect to file the extension, but I did make sure we had some money to, because I think I owe the government some money, but. You know, so I also waited the last minute because it took a while to get everything in order. And certainly all the issues going on, it certainly was needed, this extension, because I just couldn't pay attention to get all my books done.
Yeah, it's been a challenge. And then so many businesses have been short-staffed because of all this. And, you know, people off work and people working from home. And so we've seen that a lot with our business clients where they've struggled to get the year-end data together to get to us.
And Dave, what kind of clients do you like to work with?
Mostly small and medium-sized businesses. We do a lot of family-owned businesses. You know, we've got typical Tucson. It's such a small business town. It's hard to have a real concentration in any one industry. But we've got some manufacturing and some construction and real estate, all those kind of things that we do. And we've also do a lot of work with nonprofit organizations as well. And they've needed help through this process, too.
And I noticed that you do a lot of work in fraud area and helping businesses to detect that. Is that part of your practice?
It is, yeah. I'm a certified fraud examiner. One of my partners, Susan Voss, is also a CFE. And then we've got two other people in the office that have that designation. So as a result, we do some litigation support work, and a lot of times that's partnership-related disputes and those kind of things. So it's kind of an interesting niche, and it also makes us more effective, I think, when we're doing just regular audits of companies and our nonprofit clients, too, help to identify.
I imagine with these PPP loans and things, there's going to be a lot of potential fraud out there.
Yeah. That's very entirely possible, and I've heard a couple of stories already on that I won't go into on the air. I've heard of a couple thoughts of people have had of ways they could make that work for their advantage.
Hey, Dave, in the last few seconds that we have, what's your best advice for small businesses out there?
I think as specifically as it relates to these PPP loans, take your time. Don't be in a rush to ask for the forgiveness. And I'd hold back a little money in case you aren't able to get the entire thing forgiven. I've had a few clients that have kind of lost sight of the fact that if they're getting $50,000 from the federal government and they've become obsessed with getting the entire amount forgiven. But realistically, if you have to give back $5,000 or $10,000, you still got $40,000 or $45,000. For free. So anyway, try to keep it all in perspective, and again, just be a little patient as some of these rules continue to evolve over the next 60 days.
Dave, thanks so much for being with us today. Our guest has been Dave Barber from Regier, Carr & Monroe, and we hope to have you on again in the future, Dave. Thank you so much, and have a great 4th of July.
You guys too. Take care.
Thank you.
Catch us on the internet at b2btucson.com. That's b2btucson.com. If you want to sponsor our show, please call Rob at Davidson Advertising at 629-9555. You're listening to Back to Business with Robin Allen on KVOI, 1030 AM, The Voice. Our call on the line is 790-2040. That's 790-2040. Please come back after our commercial break.
For over 37 years, Allen Shoes has become the place to find quality comfort footwear, great customer service, and the best selection of sizes and widths. Allen Shoes carries men's and women's shoes from brands such as New Balance, Brooks, Hoka, Birkenstock, Clarks, Echo, Taos, Finn, Mephisto, Piccolinos, Walkie, Propay, and many others. We think we're the best place to buy shoes in Tucson. Our selection of wide widths is the best in the area. A big selection of the best brands, coupled with service from an energetic staff and a vast inventory of sizes and widths, is the Allen Shoes promise. Our new store hours are 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Allen Shoes offers the comfort you want and the service you deserve. Visit us at one of our Tucson stores or online at allenshoes.com.
So much more than just windows and doors. Tucson Window and Door.
You've seen the rest. Now see the best at Tucson Window and Door. Right now, you'll save during our biggest sale ever. Save 15% on your entire purchase, plus an additional $100 on every window and door. Tucson Window and Door is locally owned and operated. You'll never get over the top prices by aggressive salespeople who won't leave your home. We'll always treat you fairly and with respect. Check out our numerous testimonials and positive reviews. For the best products at the best prices, specially engineered for Tucson's harsh elements, remember Tucson Window and Door. Financing options are available OAC. Remember, save 15% plus an additional $100 on every window and door during our biggest sale ever at Tucson Window and Door. Go to TucsonWindowAndDoor.com to schedule your free estimate today. That's TucsonWindowAndDoor.com or call 298-DOOR, 298-DOOR, ROC number 206959.
So much more than just windows and doors, Tucson Window and Door.
Got bugs, termites, bees, or rodents? Arizona Pest Control will hunt them down. Arizona Pest Control is your complete desert pest management specialist. Pests can't run or hide from Arizona Pest Control. They use only the latest and most technologically advanced methods of pest elimination available, which minimizes the effects on the environment. Let Arizona Pest Control get rid of your bad bugs, termites, bees, or rodents. Serving Tucson and Southern Arizona since 1947, go to azpest.com to schedule your free evaluation today.
Water is the essence of life. Doesn't your family deserve the best? Give your family the best with the drinking water system from WaterTech. Our systems will provide you and your family with clean, healthy water, up to 25 gallons per day. A soft water system from WaterTech will help protect your plumbing, fixtures, will eliminate hard water minerals, and make your dishes and glasses sparkle. Give your family the gift of water from WaterTech.
WaterTech,
providing service after the sale
since 1967.
Welcome back to Business with Rob and Alan. I'm Rob Davidson, owner of Davidson Advertising.
And I'm Alan McLofsky, owner and operator of Alan Shoes. The sponsors of Back to Business are Tucson Window and Door, Al Coronado Plumbing, Steamy Concept, WaterTech, Arizona Pest Control, and Alan Shoes.
So, Alan, let's talk about our big topic of the week now, the difference between delegate and abdicate.
Okay, so first of all, Rob, I know that one of the tenets of good leadership is to trust people, but this topic has to do with supporting the person you delegate to. As a leader, you need to have some sort of understanding regarding the project and tasks that you delegate to your staff and have a willingness, a strength to jump in when you find things aren't going as planned.
When you delegate to someone, you give them responsibility for something, but you stay in the information loop. If you're delegating, you're turning over responsibility to someone else, but you're still in the loop, so you know exactly at what point you might need to get involved again and maybe help out in some way.
Rob, I think it's even a little bit more than that. Often I'll find that a staff person feels that when delegating a project that they need to, that they get to make the decisions. Well, that's not how it should work, in my opinion. The job of a subordinate is to perform within the rules set up, considering the culture of the organization and the decisions of their superior. At any time, as head of my company, I might step in and I might make a different decision.
Why is that?
Well, as the leader of the company, I'm supposed to have access to more information. Perhaps I know something that the person who's handling the task doesn't know. Perhaps something happened during the project that changes things. Plus, there's one more very important reason that the boss has a final say.
And I bet that's because if there's a problem, you have to pay for it, right?
Yes, that's it. When we as owners of the business delegate a project, a task or a responsibility, we don't ask the subordinate to chip in when things go south. We don't take money out of the pocket of the employee. We carry the cause. Therefore, we have the right, I'll say the responsibility, to step in and protect the company's interests and assets, its cash. And the owner might get possibly hurt, and in my business, that's me. But this topic applies to whoever is delegating authority to somebody else.
So here are six steps for delegating tasks and monitoring progress. Allow enough time for delegating the task. Communicate all necessary details and background information. Check understanding thoroughly. Make sure the person you're delegating knows exactly what you're looking for. Focus on outcomes, not methods. And provide encouragement by expressing confidence and rewarding success.
Rob, I think I have an issue with almost every one of those. I can hear my director of stores, Don, in his head saying, "Of course you do." So let's talk about those six steps.
Okay.
Allowing enough time for delegating the task. Now, that one I basically do agree with, that you need to allow enough time, but sometimes you don't have that time. So you start a project, you say, like, this needs to be completed by a certain date, and it needs to be completed. And the person who you're delegating to has to find some time to make that work, and they need to communicate with you and let you know that I don't have enough time, what should I do, and you can step in and help them. Number two, communicate all necessary details and background information. Well, I try to do my best doing that. I'll write up, I'm pretty detailed, I'll write up an explanation or in either a Word document or Excel giving the steps and the information I know. That information may change, though, and I have the responsibility of providing that to my subordinate. Three, check understanding thoroughly. Well, we try to do our best, but a lot of times we delegate tasks to someone and they shake their head yes, and they say they understand. Later on, they come to you and say, you know, I never really didn't understand that. And so the person being delegated to, they have a responsibility here to say, at the beginning when you delegate to them, I didn't quite get that. But they rarely are willing to come to their superior and say, I don't understand it. They sort of think magically some information will come their way. Four, focus on outcomes, not methods. Well, I kind of have a disagreement because there are certain methods that I've learned over time might work in my business. And I try to tell somebody when I'm delegating, so here's a method you should use for this. Often I find out that they don't understand that method. So we need to slow down and try to make sure that they agree A is A and B is B. And then we're going to find out that the result, C and C, can be met. But it can't be if you don't agree that A is A and B is B.
Correct.
So number five, provide encouragement by expressing confidence and rewarding success. Well, I'll agree with that we need to express confidence in the person and we need to reward success. That doesn't necessarily mean monetarily. It could be in various different forms, and because people are getting paid for doing the job working for you.
That's true. You're paying them a weekly salary or whatever. You are entitled to some kind of success from them, but you know, a pat on the back goes a long way, and I know a lot of bosses are not good at doing that, and especially nowadays when people are under a lot of stress. I think it's probably very helpful if you're patting your people on the back and encouraging them and thanking them all the time. I think the word thank you makes a lot of sense now and goes a long way. I've worked for some bosses in the past that word never entered the vocabulary.
I agree with you. And the overall topic here, though, is that when you delegate, that doesn't mean it's no longer your responsibility. It remains your responsibility. Don't just walk away from the project. You delegated something, it's your responsibility to supervise it and watch and see what's going on. And then if your subordinate doesn't report back to you, you reach out to them and you say to them, how is this going? Okay, so let's see if you have any other news stories before we end our show for the day.
One interesting one I just saw. How Six Flags plans to survive the coronavirus. In early 2020, Six Flags theme park chain found itself facing extinction for the second time in about a decade, this time due to the coronavirus pandemic. But investors say a recent influx of needed cash and a renewed focus on its core business have given it a solid chance of survival and perhaps some good years ahead. Often overshadowed by the massive and famous destination parks run by Disney and Universal, Six Flags is the biggest player in the business of regional theme parks with 26 locations across North America. Since its beginnings in Texas in 1961, Six Flags enjoyed a successful, though sometimes tumultuous, rise, only to find itself bankrupt in the midst of the financial crisis back in 2008. The company reemerged and has enjoyed several years of strong sales. But by the time the coronavirus pandemic struck, Six Flags was already struggling with stymied plans to expand internationally. After a $725 million debt offering in April to help weather the crisis, the company is focusing on gradually reopening its parks. It's employing a number of health and safety measures. Park guests will have to make reservations ahead of time to keep attendance levels manageable. Most jurisdictions that are allowing businesses to reopen are limiting customer capacity to about 25% of a business's typical maximum capacity. That's an issue. That's a definite issue when it comes to making money. All guests and employees are required to wear face masks. They'll undergo temperature checks before they enter the park and a new fast thermal screening technology. There are dedicated hand washing and sanitizing stations and cleaning teams. Markers indicate how riders should line up to provide space between guests, and the park will leave empty seats on rides to keep parties apart. It's an interesting new world, Alan.
You have to plug in all these expenses, all this time, all this different procedures, which usually equals fewer sales. And you have to plug those into your equation now. And you and I were just discussing this before we went on air, is that I'm not sure how this economic formula works for some of these businesses. How much longer can they operate with, you go into a restaurant, there's only half of the booths that you can sit at.
Yeah, and they want the place to be packed. Packed is how you make money in that business. I know I was in the bar business many years ago, and we wanted the place to be jammed on a Friday night. You didn't want anybody to be able to move. So nowadays, if you can only have 25% occupancy, it's going to be almost impossible to make your expenses.
It's going to be very tough. So, I think you and I both have a feel for the small business owners out there and what they're going through. At the same point, you and I also are strong advocate of wearing masks, and we just don't understand the public displays of not wearing masks and the encouragement not to wear a mask. Let's take South Dakota this weekend.
Yep. They had a big to-do last night at Mount Rushmore, didn't they? No masks.
They pretty much said, there's not going to be any social distancing and there's not going to be any enforcement, so, that didn't make us happy.
Just the way it is.
So catch us on the internet at b2btucson.com. If you want to sponsor our show, please call Rob at Davidson Advertising, 629-9555. If you're a retailer or a restaurant owner, any business who's struggled through the last few months, or someone just interested in business, this is the show for you. It's Back to Business. Rob and Alan, KVOI AM, The Voice, 9 a.m. on Saturdays. This is Alan Maklofsky.
And I'm Rob Davidson. Thank you for being with us this week. Have a great Independence Day weekend. Please stay safe and be well.